Before we begin, let's take a moment to put our hands together to worship the unvanquished, the unparalleled, the sublime Tathagata by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. With the permission from the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Mahasangha, let us begin. The month of April is gone, and we've entered the month of May, the 5th month of the year. How much closer are you to the end of your journey? I think every now and then, it's always great to, you know, ask yourself, How much more have I changed? How different am I from who I used to be last month, last week? Because what we have to do, and what we have to realize is, first and foremost, who is the most perfect person in the world? Apart from the Buddha, of course. The second most perfect person in this world is myself, or you. Or so we feel as though, you know, we are the most, you know, we are correct, we are right, we are perfect. And it's really funny because, you know, once someone shows you in some sort of way that maybe you're not as perfect as you think you are, we almost become a bit taken back. Almost that we don't like it, but we accept it because we know that, you know, mistakes happen, but we don't like it. But here's the thing. There are you can say, even though we may think, you know, sometimes we think that we're correct, sometimes we think that, you know, sometimes we're wrong, very rarely we're wrong. However, whether you think, you know, you're correct or you're sometimes wrong, I mean, you know, sometimes, don't you feel that sometimes you can predict the future? Sometimes you feel that, you know, I know what's going to happen. You look at a person, you say, you know, I know this person, right? You may have never met them before, but you say, you know, I know this sort of personality. This person's like this, this, and this, and this. And when you meet the person, sometimes, if not most of the times, your judgment is correct. And so sometimes we start to believe that, you know, I can guess. Or I can, you know, have a good judgment of the future because I've been, you know, I have associated so many people that I can, you know, have an understanding of a person. However, although you may believe you know, or you feel as though you know, or you can predict, or you are. For as long as you feel you are, there's something wrong. For as long as you feel that you are, you know, you are correct, you are always correct, or you are, you know, you are right, there is something always wrong. There is something that's always wrong. Being correct is not the issue. It's the feeling that I am correct. Or I can predict. Because predicting happens. The more knowledge that you have, the more experience that you have, the more, you know, with enough information, you can almost guess what's going to happen. So for example, those of you who know on the 30th, this month, we'll be having Vesak, will know that most likely, yes, it's your imagination, but you can have a guess and say, you can take a stab and say, you know, on the 30th, we're most likely going to have a massive ceremony for Vesak. Those people who don't have the information will not be able to make the guess. So, you may think that, you know, it's very easy to come to this conclusion saying that, you know, I am right. Although we may accept that we may make mistakes here and there, what we like to believe is that I am right. I am right. And most of the times I am right, or I am good. Or there's this idea that I am something here. But one of the most important things on this journey is to be able to place yourself in a position where you're able to criticize yourself. Criticize not only the bad. Because if you criticize only the bad, that is also wrong. Because you're saying that either I am good and these are my bad things, or I am bad and these are the bad things I do. But you are not good nor bad. Nature is not good or nor bad. Nature is always neutral. So, you know, give yourself a chance. Give yourself some time to criticize yourself. See what bad happens. Now, of course, most of you, you know, we live and breathe in the monastery, and therefore, you know, it may not be as obvious. I don't think, the people who come to the monastery, you'll hear them shout and scream very often. I don't think the person in the monastery will, you know, have the urge to, you know, take something that's not theirs and steal. But there will always be something. Either that there's a specific someone who really annoys you. Now, you know, whenever you see them, the first thing, you know, you feel this almost this strong dislike, but you don't show it. Because why? I'm a Siddha Shravaka, I can't show it. I'm a Siddha Shravaka, I can't show it. So you smile and wave and do as everything normal. But inside the heart, you feel, how can I avoid? I think something that you sometimes realize is some people have very, sharp tongues. That they would play, they'll play their cards without even you'll play your cards without the other person even knowing that you played your cards. Why? Because you have this dislike. I mean, see, criticize both the bad and good. See, you know, come to, you know, give yourself a moment to look through what you normally do, what you normally feel, and give yourself time to criticize. This sort of person I don't like. These people I do like. And if you are able to, you should be able to say, from the people that you don't like, you should be able to pick out the factor. Because remember, it's not that we like or dislike people. There are causes that's causing dislike, and there are causes that are causing this sudden or this affinity towards someone. So you should be able to pick out and say, these sort of people I don't like because of this trait. Because of this trait, I don't like this. Because of this trait, I like these people. You should be able to pick these out. And once you've picked it out, once you've picked out that trait, now you don't let go. Now you ask yourself, why am I feeling what I feel? Why do I feel this sudden dislike to this person because of this? Why do I feel sudden like to this person because of this? And now you don't let it go. So, criticize yourself. Don't let yourself off the hook very easily. Ask yourself, why do I feel this? Why did I feel angry here? Why did I feel a sudden, say you're going to the alms round today. And as you're eating the soya, you said, wow, the soya is really nice. And you wanted to, you suddenly feel this pleasure from the soya. You can't let that go. But just as you criticize the bad, you also have to look at the good. Ask yourself, am I the same person that was here, last month, last year? Am I the same person? Do I have the same qualities? Because if you say, yes, I am the same person, that means the theory of anicca, the laws of anicca does not work on you. The laws of cause and effect does not work on you. If you say that, I'm the same person that was there, 2 years ago, that means, you're the only nitya thing in this world. You should be able to pick up your good qualities as well. I used to be selfish around these now. I used to be selfish, now no longer. I used to get angry at this, now no longer. I used to feel this, now no longer. You should be able to pick up both good and bad. You should be able to pick up your good points as well. As you're surrounded by extraordinary people, you should be able to pick up lots of good points. If you can't pick up your own good points, ask another person. It's easier to see someone else's mistakes and another person's improvements than your own. So ask another. Do you see a change? Where do you see a change? Is it a good change, a bad change? How should I change? Use the people around you. Use the people around you to see what you have to improve on. Use the people around you to reinforce things that you do. See, for example, let's say every day, you somehow find time to spend 15 minutes chanting Buddha Guna in our shrine. If that's something that you think is a good thing, see it and accept it. However, if you come to the idea that you say, I was for the last 2 months, every day, I was able to chant Buddha Guna in the Buddha shrine. But, last week on Thursday, I wasn't able to because of this and this. If you feel that, on Thursday, I wasn't able to, And therefore, you know, it's not, you know, I feel really bad about it. Because I was doing it so consistently for 2 whole months, but, you know, on Thursday I wasn't able to. Understand there's 2 things there. Number one, criticize the bad. Why did I miss it? Second thing, see the good. Because if you just see the bad, because if you just say, you know, I was able to do it for 2 months, but last Thursday I missed it. And if you feel disappointed, understand that there is something there that you cling on to. So for example, in the sasana, practitioners will sometimes observe, they're called austerities, dutangas. The thing with dutangas is, you know, these are things that are to help another person to improve their path, to you know, fight with their defilements. However, these things are completely and 100% personal. So for example, let's say as a person is observing the dutanga, the austerity of, you know, they will always go on pindapada, going house to house begging for alms. They won't go into a dana and, you know, have alms served to them. Instead, they'll go on pindapada. That's something that they're going to protect. You know, sometimes they could protect for years and years. But let's say one time, let's say their teacher says, you know, Abhyandaru, student, my relatives want to give a dana. Can you come? You see, this is a very personal thing. Observing these things are very personal. So although the monk may have observed it for years, without saying a single word, I think there's a story as well, where a monk was observing, you know, several dutangas, you know, for many, many years. But on one occasion, because someone had asked, for that moment, he let go. He said, okay. 6 years consistently, he went on alms, begging for alms, you know, going door to door. But because someone had asked him, he decided to do what? To break it. Did he tell anyone? You know, actually, you know, I'm observing these dutangas, therefore I can't do that. Or did he say that, you know, because of you, I'm going to break a 6-year dutang, you know, 6-7 years, I was, you know, observing these dutangas, now, you know, because of you, I'm going to break it, you know, this is a very special. No, he would say nothing. Because if you were to find that special, that is what? Also wrong. So let's say, you know, let's say you always do something. One day you weren't able to do it. If you start feeling guilty and thinking, you know, I was able to do it for this long, but yesterday I wasn't able to do it. If you start feeling guilty, understand that there's a specific attachment to that thing. You fail to realize that at that moment, that activity is something of that something as a result of cause and effect. Instead, you believe that I was doing this for X amount of time. You know, I was chanting Buddha Guna, you know, for the last, you know, 2 years, every day I found a way to do at least 5 minutes. But yesterday, you know, I fell asleep and therefore I wasn't able to do it. Now I feel really guilty, you know, I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that. If you start feeling guilty, there's something wrong. So, you know, give yourself time to criticize. Understand, you're not the most perfect person. We make mistakes, and that's fine. If someone was to show you your mistake, if you get angry at that person, well, there is no bigger fool than yourself. If someone comes and show you your mistake, and if you start getting upset about it, there's no bigger fool than yourself. Because if you get angry, what you're trying to show the other person is, no, I am a perfect person, I don't have mistakes, I'm okay. That there's nothing wrong with me. You know, I don't do this, I don't do that, but you know, you're telling me this, I don't like it, so stop doing it. See, if someone comes and show you a mistake, no matter how big or small, you should have the mindset to accept, no matter what. No matter what it is, accept. Let's say it's something that you've never done before. See, you know, I think one thing that's the most hardest thing to do is to accept something that you haven't done. When someone blames you for something that you haven't done, one of the most hardest things to do is to say, okay, I'm sorry. Because why? You want to prove to the other person that, no, it wasn't me. It was someone else. It has to be someone else. See, I was here, this, and this. But it's very hard to accept it. Now, this is not saying that, let's say, someone accuses you of stealing. That's not saying, yes, I was a thief, I'm sorry. No, this is saying that this urge that you have to prove your innocence. Proving your innocence is the right thing to do. But the urge that you have to prove that I am innocent here, I didn't do anything, that's wrong. The urge is wrong. So if someone came up and asked, why did you steal? You know, stealing is bad. Why did you steal? You should be able to say, okay, I'm sorry. But if someone says, did you steal? What would you say? No. No, I didn't steal. Yeah, but you know, stealing is a really bad thing to do. You know, you're a horrible person because of this. You should be able to say what? Okay. That's fine by me. Okay. But that's incredibly hard to do because you have someone to keep safe. Someone to protect. What's that? Me. The most perfect person in the world. Me? Stealing? No. In the monastery? No, that can't be. Who do you think I am? And you have this person to protect. You have this being to protect. So criticize yourself. Every single day, criticize yourself. See the mistakes you've made. Because how do you trust yourself? That's a very good question, isn't it? How do you trust yourself? Can you trust yourself? With the mindset that you are the most perfect person in the world, of course you can trust yourself. With that mindset that, you know, I am good, I am right, I am always right, you know, husband's always wrong, wife's always wrong, you know, these are wrong, those are wrong. With that mindset, of course, every decision you make is the right one. But when you realize, in truth, that the decisions that you make are cause and effect, how do you trust yourself? How do you trust the decisions that you make to be the best decisions possible? Now, this is not me trying to make you doubt your decisions. This is not me trying to say that your decisions are all wrong. No, I'm simply asking the question, how do you know the decisions that you make are the best? Are the best ones you can make? Because do you ever question the decisions that you make? No, you say, you know, today I'm going to do this, and 99% of the time you do it. You don't question. You know, you don't question yourself because, you know, it's you. It's you. Are you ever wrong? No. Sometimes here and there, but most of the majority of time, I am always correct. We don't see it. We don't think of it like that. We always think that I am correct. The decisions that I make are correct. For example, in the monastery, to protect all the people who are inside, something that our monastery does is that, you know, we live in the 21st century, surrounded by technology. I mean, I don't think you can now live a life without any sort of technology, you know, completely away from all technology. So surrounded by technology, as well as surrounded by access to the internet. And something that our teachers have done, our teachers and noble associations have done, is create, you know, this a safe environment for people to use what they need. It's called a firewall. Now, I was thinking about this because, you know, it's a very interesting thing to think about. Why is it not possible to give this protection to more people? So, for example, that means that, you know, if you require to go access a site, you have to go and get a form. Trust me, I don't have the form. If I could show you the form, I'll show you. You have to go to the form, you know, write the website, get it signed by your teacher, get it signed by the head of your, say, for example, say you need a website to for a certain project that you're doing. You have to go to the project leader and get that signed. Then go to a member of the Sangha Council and get it signed. Then it's sent to the IT department, which again, it's looked through. It's, you know, you do take a fine comb and comb through it. Sometimes some websites, you know, your teacher will ask you, do you really need that? Can't you not use that and still get the work done? And then you have to prove over and over again that, you know, I actually need this. If I don't have this, I can't do this and this and this and this. And if all goes well, it doesn't stop there. It gets sent to, you know, the head of the IT, who again will go and, you know, accept or deny. It doesn't stop there. Some websites will go to, you know, Nayakandra, and Nayakandra will look at it and either get accept or deny. And if all goes well, you have access to the site. You know, if you were to tell this to another person, the first thing they'll ask is what? Why? Why go through all that trouble? You know, it's just a website. It's just Google Docs. What's the worst thing that could happen? Let's say. Well, that is noble association. That is noble association. Why? Your teachers and the surrounding people are trying to give you what you need, of course. We're not trying to not give you what you need. We're trying to give you what you need, but protecting you otherwise. You know, sometimes, you know, the end of, you know. So sometimes, you know, I get lots of people come and complain to me, like, oh, you know, why does it have to be such a long process? And I say, that long process is what protects you. Because, you know, sometimes, if you were given all internet access, how do you trust yourself? Forget all internet access. Let's say you're given, So, for example, something that's highly filtered is YouTube. It's something that's highly filtered. So only a small handful of people actually have access to YouTube. I tell this to some other, you know, I've told this to a group of children. They ask me, how do I live? I say, I don't need YouTube to live. So, let's say you're given YouTube. How do you know that you can, how do you trust yourself? Because it's the same, I think YouTube is a site that, 99% of all people have used. And we've all fallen into the trap of watching a video and looking at the what's up next or recommended and going through and looking for one and clicking on it and staying in this cycle. How do you trust yourself though? Now you're in the monastery, now you're practicing, now you know that, you shouldn't be, you know that curiosity is something of a defilement here, and if there is something you want to click, that is also a defilement because that's a desire inside. How do you trust yourself? See, because of ignorance and attachment, you believe that you know. You believe that you know what is right. Even at the times that later on you feel that, no, I shouldn't have done that. At that moment you did it feel wrong? Sometimes it might. Sometimes it will, say for example, let's say you're doing something knowing it's wrong. But at that moment, you don't care. Because why? Because of ignorance and attachment, what is also there? This pressure. Because of ignorance and attachment, there's this pressure that builds up behind. So even though you fully well know it's wrong, because of ignorance and attachment, because the mind is feeling this buildup of pressure, to relieve that pressure, the mind will do. The mind will use its senses to do. So if you have ignorance and attachment, how do you trust yourself? If you still have ignorance and attachment, how do you trust yourself? But yet you never doubt yourself. You never think that, am I doing what is right? We need to, this is why we only have one enemy and one enemy alone. YouTube is not an enemy. Chocolate cake is not an enemy. Food is not an enemy. People is not an enemy. Sometimes it's really funny that, you get to hear about people, argue. I don't think I can listen to an argument with a straight face anymore. Because it's now, it's come to the point where when I see two people, having a small argument, it comes to the point where that I feel that, why? What are they trying to do? What's the purpose? You come to the point where you look at an argument and think, why? Like, I understand that they don't agree on something, but why are they shouting? What does shouting actually do to this? You also, how sometimes, some arguments, they escalate to become more than just a conversation. They start screaming, shouting, and words are being used, which we normally don't use in normal scenarios. You know, and then sometimes, you know, hands and legs are being used. You know, you can look at that and I don't think I can look at that and think it's normal anymore. Because why? It's ignorance and attachment at play. It's ignorance and attachment. It's a mind that is so, that these are minds that are ignorant. It's like this, right? Have you seen two toddlers fight? Or have an argument? You know, small children, when they have, you know, when they have an argument, what is it that you feel? You feel naive children, aren't they? You know, they don't even know. They're fighting over who has the biggest strawberry. You know, they're both the same strawberry. We have more strawberries here, but they're fighting who gets the biggest strawberry. What is the point? You know, people who practice the path, when they see, you know, people fight, that's the same feeling they have. Don't they understand that this is not happening this way like this? This is happening like this instead. They don't understand. So if we come back, you know, how do you, you know? This is why you can't judge or you can't trust yourself. You can't trust yourself. Because as long as you have ignorance and attachment, the next thing that happens is pressure builds. You know, have you never had that feeling is that you know, you really want something. And you feel that you have no other choice but to get it. See, this can occur in different forms. It can be big or small. It can be, you know, it could be a food or it could be something or someone. It doesn't matter. But, you know, it becomes to the point that, you know, you can't control yourself. That you don't realize what is right, what is wrong. Instead, you feel what? How can I get this? How can I get this? You know, I was talking to some of our 18 minuses the other day, and one thing that he was complaining about, he said, "Abhinandan, why does the monastery have so many CCTVs? So many. You know, we got one here, one there, over here." And he was complaining, saying that in a very small building, the building was probably just about half more than this hall. It has 21 CCTVs. I think we're going over the top with this. And the solution, and then the thing I said to him is, so what? So what? But where is the privacy? What are you trying to hide? What are you trying to hide? The Buddha says, what? To be like glass, to be like a mirror, to be open. But if you want to hide yourself, because if you think about it, you know, CCTVs are not an issue if you don't do anything wrong. But if you want to do something wrong, there's an issue. So I asked him, why? And, you know, why is it an issue? Because why I'm going to do so, you know, and we got to the point that he says, you know, sometimes that, you know, I feel that I can't do things. And I said, what? Great. Let's focus on that. Let's focus on that. You see, this is why. How do you trust a mind that has ignorance and attachment? How do you trust a mind that has ignorance and attachment? You can't. How do you trust another person who has ignorance and attachment? It's impossible. Because when ignorance and attachment's at play, vexation's there. Pressure builds up. When pressure builds up, who knows how it's going to end? if you think about it, from a small word to world wars, that's all because of what? Ignorance and attachment. From a small word, you know, someone says it's a small word, to an entire world war, that's because of what? Ignorance and attachment. So how do you trust yourself? This is why, you know, this is why, be open. Let others see who you truly are. Let others see who you truly are. Be open. Let them criticize you as well as let yourself criticize yourself. See, here's the thing, right? We're all in this journey to get rid of our ignorance and attachment. So when someone shows our mistakes, why should we be hurt? We're all in this journey to get rid of ignorance and attachment. So when someone shows a mistake, why do we get hurt? Be open. That's the thing, you know. When you practice the path, ego reduces. To be able to practice the path, you have to reduce your ego. This is why this journey is very difficult. This is why this journey can only happen when you accept, when you understand that, you know, this feeling of the sense of self is just a feeling. And you put your ego down. This journey cannot be taken if ego is at play. If ever ego is there, this journey is, you know, it's like almost trying to, you know, it doesn't matter how much, you know, you try to practice, how much sermons you listen to. It's almost like trying to drive a boat or try to, you know, sail a boat with the anchor in. The anchor of ego binds you onto the same place. You don't move anywhere because ego doesn't let you. That's why you have to put your ego down to be able to practice. You need to be able to put your ego to the very lowest of the low to be able to practice the path. Now, when we talk about ego, we're not talking about this feeling of, you know, we're not talking about, you know, I am the best person in this world and therefore everyone has to treat me right. You know, why did you say this? Why did you do this? No, not the ego as in the big pride and ego and, you know, the way that you want to show off to other people. We're not talking about ego in the biggest form. We're talking about ego in the smallest. The minute places where ego pops up. The minute places where ego wants to come out to play. That's the problem here. For example, those of you who live in the monastery, we have very, very little paths to show how big our ego is. For example, you know, we don't drive massive Ferraris, do we? We don't have, you know, designer clothes, do we? We don't get to eat, you know, very expensive, you know, like caviar and all this expensive food, do we? We don't get to sleep on, seven-layered mattresses, do we? So the way we express the ego is different. See, if you really look at it, because it's like, you know, it's like you were trying to, you know, the monastery's environment means that, you know, the ego is, it doesn't have many places to come up and show itself. You know, we can't express, or we can't show who we are through our clothes because, you know, we all wear the same thing. You know, devotees who come through the gate usually wear white. You know, the anagarikas, anagarikas, the silsharikas, the monks, and everyone wears similar clothes. So we have very, very, very little places to express our, or to show our ego. However, that doesn't mean there is no. It doesn't mean that there's no way where you can express it. For example, you know, your ego can be in different places. One of the strongest things that ego likes to do is to know. Is to know. Ego likes to know. Or feel as though it knows something. So for example, see, when you have a conversation with someone and they're talking about a specific topic, don't we like to feel as though we know something about this topic so we can add something to this? We don't like when someone's talking about something and we have no idea what this is. So for example, you know, on the 30th, we have Vesak. Oh, Vesak, right? Yeah, you know, there's this decorations coming up. And you like to be able to say to another person some information that they don't know, or at least show the other person that you know something. Why? Because the ego play there as well. We don't like it when they say, oh, you know, if someone comes and say, you know, on the 30th, it's Vesak. Vesak? 30th? Actually? I didn't know. We like to feel as though we know something. At least we know, oh, you know, Vesak's the day that the Buddha was born, right? At least something. We don't like feeling that we know nothing because ego wants to be placed somewhere. Ego wants to be placed somewhere. That's why, you know, sometimes it's very easy, right? To trick someone into feeling that they know something. You know, sometimes you're talking with someone and they say, oh, yes, I know this. For example, one of our small KT children. I mean, they're small, understandable, right? They don't have the views that we have. You know, they were having this big, you know, what was the word? They were talking, you know, they were trying to show off, you know, this is who I, you know, this is my parents and this, I used to live here, I used to live there. And sometimes this is very simple, you ask a simple question. So, for example, one child has explained that they used to live, they you know, when I mean child, they're not toddlers, they're like good 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, right? Saying that they used to live in this sort of place. And all you do is you ask them a question. So, what was this like? They look at you and think, what? What's that? But if you know this, you should know this, right? And they suddenly get really hurt. Because why? They feel as though what? They should know. And so sometimes they'll lie and say, ah, that? Oh, yeah. We went there as well. Where is it? Oh, you know, just across the, you know, just, you know, if this is my house, then over there, this, there. You're like, but isn't that a place in Bulgaria? Huh? Really? I mean, the thing is, you know, when it comes to ego, ego wants to put itself somewhere. See, you have to be very, you know, you have to be able to pick up ego. Where does it come from? Where does it go? You have to be able to finally comb. You know, this is why, let yourself criticize yourself. See where ego comes up to play. See where ego comes out to play. And attack. Ask yourself, why do I feel pride here? Why do I feel ego here? Because it's very easy. It's very easy to let ego run loose. Because you've never thought of ego to be a problem. You know, if you were to look at yourself, you know, if you meticulously pick out where you see ego, you'll find lots of places, but we don't see them to be a problem because through our entire life, ego was, you know, our best friend. We've never seen a mistake in it, but now because we understand that ego is what? Ego is just a feeling. Now we have to nitpick at all these opportunities that ego comes out to play. Something that's very common is that, you know, sometimes when someone asks you to do something, you always say yes. Someone so say, anyone asks, say, if you have a habit of always saying yes to anything that someone asks you to do. So they ask you, excuse me, can you do this? Okay. Can you do this? Sure. Can you do this? Yeah. If you have a habit of always saying yes, ask yourself why. Why is it that you have a habit of always saying yes? Is it to be helpful? Or is it to maintain this feeling that I'm a helpful person? Or to maintain the feeling that, you know, I don't want to say no and then get that other person upset with me. I want the other person to also, you know, be someone that likes my association. That's why I don't say no. Ask yourself. Because ego plays in its most, you know, plays its games in the most smallest places. You need to be able to you need to be able to meticulously pick them out. And like we talked about last time, you know, can you tidy up someone else's mess and not tell them? So your car, so let's say your section, or so, like, for example, for we talked about last week, for our monks and anagarikas and anagarikas, you know, we have a small box filled with our stuff. If the person next to our box is messy, can we clean that up? Can we tidy that up, without telling the other person? Because sometimes you feel that, no, this is my box. That's their box. My box has to be neat and tidy with, you know, has to be pristine and spotless. Other boxes? Doesn't matter. You know, my bed or the place that I sleep has to be very nice and clean, you know. You know, I you know, every time I get off my bed, I make my bed. The other person, you know, she doesn't do anything. You know, she just wakes up and then goes and leaves it. So, you know, I tell her to do it, she doesn't do it. Why can't you do it? Because why? There's this person at play here. Who? Ego. Me? Do that? But if someone asks you to do it, you know, if someone asks you to make someone else's bed, of course I'll do that, you know, because I'm a good person. And you tidy up their bed. But if you see it, you automatically feel that that's someone else's bed. Not my bed. I should make my bed, not someone else's. So ego finds its ways in the most smallest of places. And you need to be able to pick those out. You need to be able to, you know, actually grab those and uproot them. That's why let yourself, you know, criticize yourself. Ask yourself these questions. Why did I do this? Why did I not do this? Ask yourself these questions, and therefore you open Pandora's box. The moment you open Pandora's box, all evil starts to come out of the box. You realize that, oh, there's this and this and this and this and this. Let's get rid of this, let's get rid of this, let's get rid of this. This is why this is a very specific journey. That's why if you were to sit down on your backside hoping that one day Nibbana will come, it will. Don't worry, it will. If you were to sit on your backside thinking, you know, one day, you know, may by the power of all the merits I accumulate, may I attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. And if you do that every single day, you know, Nibbana will come. The moment you get off your backside and start doing. The moment you start doing, then, you know, then you'll be able to change yourselves to do this. If not, just wishing and praying, Like they say, wishes don't wash dishes. That's why this is a journey. This is a very practical journey. This is something that only you and only you can do. Something that I remember I used to have, and I know lots of people have, is that thinking, the mindset thinking, you know, Nibbana, you know, this is, it's not my responsibility, you know, it's under my teacher. They'll preach a sermon. One day Guru Andhra will preach the right sermon to me, and then I'll become, you know, I'll become a Sotapanna, and then I'll become an Arahant someday after that. I have to start to wait for that sermon. I just have to wait for that right sermon. When will that sermon be? When it happens, it happens. Until then, I'm okay. But no, that's not how it works. This is a journey. This is a journey that starts with you. Starts with you and ends without you. It's a journey that starts with you and ends without you. This is the thing, this is your responsibility. This is why Guru Handru will tell you time and time again that, you know, your Nibbana is in your hands. You have to do. It's, you know, it's very easy to start complaining. I mean, I think that's what humanity is very, very good at doing. Complaining. It's too sunny, it's too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry, you know, it starts raining, now I can't dry my clothes. We're very good at complaining. You know, since we were, you know, very small, one of the first things that we're taught is to complain. But never do we take it to our own hands and do it. We very rarely take it to our own hands and do. You know, I can't practice because, you know, I have this responsibility. I can't practice because I have to go to school. You know, school, 6 hours of school, I have to sit there and listen to this teacher, you know, teach me stuff that I'll never use ever again. Who uses Pythagoras theorem, but we still have to learn it. I can't practice the path while learning. And, you know, you take this, you know, this complaint. Or, you know, I can't practice because, my back is hurting, therefore I can't practice. I can't sit down anymore, therefore, you know, what am I supposed to do? You know, I'm going to have to think, do this, do that. And, you know, we're very, very easy to give us an excuse, saying that I couldn't do it because of this. But those excuses are yours. The past is also yours. So instead of giving excuses, you're not giving excuses to anyone but yourself. Trying to make yourself feel that, oh, I'm okay, everything's okay, you know. I'm not practicing because of this. I have taken this responsibility of marking this card, you know, to making sure everyone's here on time. Therefore, I can't contemplate. Sometimes, you know, you'll give excuses and they don't match. But you'll still give it. Because why? You want to give a reason why you can't contemplate. Because, you know, it's your responsibility. It's in your hands. It's entirely in your hands. But yet, you know, you find some sort of way to dismiss it. I remember, there used to be a time where I thought that Nibbana was something my teacher can do for me. The Nibbana was something that my teacher can do for me. So, you know, when my teacher teaches properly, I will attain Nibbana. Until then, you know, I just wait. Sit down and wait. I mean, yes, teacher is there. But what is teacher? What is teacher? The Dhamma. Dhamma is where? within you. That's the teacher. The views of noble companionship is the stuff that you hear. That you hear and that you practice. See, the journey is in you. The journey can only be taken by you. No one else can do it for you. That's why usually we like the teach, you know, we like teachers that are very hard on us sometimes. It's like, you know, you like the when a teacher says, you know, I mean, you know, why did you not do this? Why did you not do that? Because you want to feel that the responsibility of Nibbana is given to my teacher. They'll tell me what to do and I'll follow their instructions to the best I possibly can. I can't do everything they say. And you want to give the responsibility to someone else, but that responsibility is yours and yours alone. That responsibility is yours and yours alone. No one can walk it for you but yourself. And that's why. Practice. And that's why. Practice and practice and practice and practice. Whenever you fail, then go to your teacher and say, "Teacher, I tried and I couldn't do it here. How can you help? How can I do it better?" There is nothing mystical and magical about this path. You know, nothing will be given, you know, nothing will land into your hands. You hope and pray, and, you know, something comes into your hand automatically, and nothing like that. This journey is practical. You know, we hear the stories of the Buddha, and we sometimes, you know, I used to think that, you know, sometimes that, you know, all you have to do is listen to one sermon and poof, you become an arahant. There's a mystical, magical thing about this. And then you start listening to sermons, you realize what? Mm-mm. Even those things that look mystical, magical, no, there were many, many causes behind that. Many, many different things behind that. So, you know, you tell me. This journey can only be taken by you and you alone. So start. Continue and finish. Start, continue and finish. That's all we have to do. Start when? I think today in the Valley Maluwa, someone has written on the sand. And I thought it was very interesting as well. What is the most precious thing that we have? What is the most precious thing that we have? I mean, different times we say different things, but if you really look at it, what is the most precious thing that you own? Technically, you own nothing. But a singular moment. You own nothing but a singular moment. So what's the most precious thing that you own? That singular moment. Or else, another word, this moment. This Pachupanna moment. Because I know sometimes, you know, when sometimes your teachers might say, you know, why aren't you, start. But I remember sometimes some teachers would tell me, you know, why aren't you practicing? Start practicing. And the one thing that I used to always say is, start practicing? Are you trying to imply that I haven't practiced? No, when he means start practicing, it means what? Use this moment to practice. Because you are always starting. Tell me one thing that you continue to do. Tell me one thing that you continuously do. No, everything starts. Because why? Everything is a moment. There's no continuous. Everything's a moment. So start in this moment. But you can say that I have been seeing for, you know, the last 3, 5, 9, 12, 13, 19, 20, 30, 100 years. But no, seeing only happens momentarily, a single moment. Hearing happens what? A single moment. So what's the most valuable thing that you own? Is a moment. You see, sometimes it's crazy when you think about it, right? People who used to own lots of things, you know, some people, you know, so most of you owned a house, cars, and lots of valuables. Now you only own one thing. What's that? You only have one valuable thing. What's that? My clothes? No, you only have one. You only own one valuable thing. What's that? This moment. Do you see the change in the mindset? I used to be a person who owns this house, this car, this job, had this and this and this and this, to the mindset that I only have what? This moment. I used to be a person who had, you know, hundreds of zeros in my bank account. Now I only have this moment. It's a complete different mindset from a person who wants material things to someone who has absolutely nothing but a moment. I mean, nothing changed except an understanding. You know, someone who owns everything actually doesn't own anything but a moment. It's not that weird. It's not that you're removing everything away from you. It's not that we're trying to take everything away from you. You know, we're taking away your house, taking away your cars, taking away your children, taking away your husbands, your wife. We're not taking anything. You don't own anything. See, you believe that it's yours. We don't take it. There's nothing, you know, the Buddha Sasana doesn't take. It just shows. That's why, you know, your attachments aren't taken away from you. It's just shown. We just show it to you. In its most purest form, that you don't own it. You know, I own this pen. No, you don't. All you own is a moment. The moment you start writing, it writes. That's the only moment you have. After you stop writing, do you own the pen? No, you own the next moment. You own the next moment. You don't own the pen. But, you know, because we live in this conventional world, you have things that you own and don't own. So it doesn't mean that you can use everything. No, in convention, we know that, you know, this is my pen. This is your pen. We know that through convention. But in reality, we only own a moment. That moment is ours for that moment. So what's the most valuable thing that you own? Singular moment. A singular moment. But isn't my life more valuable? Isn't my life valuable? Well, what is life? One moment at a time. One mind arises, one mind passes. When it passes, are you still alive? When the mind passes, are you still alive? But yeah, you truly believe, saying that, no, you know, these are my things, these are your things. This is where I eat, this is where I sleep. You know, these are my friends, those are your friends, this is my team, this is your team. But all you have is a single moment. All you have is a single moment. Take full advantage of your life. Take the full advantage of this moment. Because what is life? What is life? Life can be defined in 9 ways. Your entire life can be defined in 9 ways. What is that? Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. As well as? No, not 9, 8. As well as speaking and doing. Karma and vipaka. That is life. So take the full advantage of what? Take the full advantage of life. Don't let this moment go by. Take the 100% advantage of the life that you have right now. The mind arises, the mind passes. Where was yesterday's meal? Yesterday was Dakineyu. Right? Dakineyu means what? What do we have for Dakineyu? Panchan Sansa Mahapuja. Right? The Panchan Sansa. Right? The mind now arised. The mind now passed. Where is that? Where's Dakineyu now? At this moment, where is Dakineyu now? But you can use, you know, we can use our memory and draw a memory, and we can try to remember what Dakineyu was like. And you can say, oh yes, Dakineyu. Yeah, we had rice, paripu, soya. What else? Vade. And you can try to remember. But in reality, at this moment, where is Dakineyu? Top?
Like the moon. The Dakineyu is connected to the moon. And then it's rising the moon, and after that, finish and again.
So the mind only arises and passes. The mind only arises and passes. When it passes, see, when I say, see, I don't like the word it passes. And I don't like the word arises either. For the fact that when you say the mind arises, the mind passes, the automatic feeling that you have is there's something that comes and there's something that goes. There's something that, you know, the mind arises, the mind passes, the mind comes, the mind goes. But what comes and what goes? Nothing. These you know, this is just the, you know, all there is that the causes align at that moment for the mind to arise. And then the causes no longer come together. Therefore, the mind cannot. And that's what we call a moment. When the causes come together, the mind arises. Then, when the causes come together, the mind arises. And then, we can't ask and then, because why? Then there, the mind has to be there. There has to be this fixed mind that is somewhere that comes and then goes. Instead, what? When causes come together, the mind, an effect manifests. And then, because the cause is no longer there, the effect can no longer manifest. The effect, therefore, seems to pass. And then we're left with what? Nothing. This is why we only have a singular moment. We only have a mind. A mind that arises, the mind that passes. But you know, last week I ate this ice cream and this ice cream was superb. Where? Where is that? Where is that? The mind arises, the mind passes. It's no longer. You know how sometimes you know people look for things? So for example, let's say you had some really nice food. And, you know, I can't remember what it was exactly, but I remember once, I think it was my father. My father wanted to look for a food that he ate when he was, like, in his teens. He said he had this something, I can't remember what it was. He had something, it was so delicious, we spent an entire, I'm going to say about 3 weeks, looking for something that he remembered he had when he was young. Can he ever have the same thing that he had when he was young? But yet he looked for it. But yet he searched for it. 3 weeks. 3 weeks. Why? Because, you know, because we believe that, no, I had that then, therefore I have to have it now. It was so good, I have to find it somehow. But we fail to realize the mind arises, the mind passes, and then full stop. Once the mind passes, then what happens? It's gone. Let's say for some reason, the entire monastery goes on a trip onto a seven-star hotel. Right, with mattresses that have like 19 layers or something. Right, now we come back to the monastery. Now what? Now? Yesterday we went to this 7-star hotel. You know, with a 19-layered mattress. Everything was gold plated. It was amazing. Now what? Now what's left? Nothing but a memory. The mind arises, the mind passes, that's it, full stop. Last time I went to this restaurant, it was very nice. I have to go again because I like that. I like the rice they make. There was a very nice rice. I want to get that again. You fail to realize the mind rises, the mind passes, and that's it. You can never get that mind again. But yet you search. Man searches for happiness. Man will continue to search for happiness until man realizes that happiness cannot be searched for. Because why? Happiness is already there. The moment you stop searching, you find it. All we have to do is just understand. That's why if you truly understand that it's a mind alone. Yesterday you sleep on a 19-layer mattress, and then today you sleep on the floor. Will you feel a difference? You will feel a difference. Physically, mentally. Mentally, yesterday you eat a seven course meal. Today you eat rice and paripu. Physically, there'll be a difference. You'll be bloated yesterday, and today you're not going to be as bloated, right? But mentally, the mind rise, the mind passed. So, last week, when Guru was doing his sermon, you sat exactly at the front. This week, you were sent right to the back. Difference? The mind arises, the mind passes. Okay. This is why, you know, this is a very, very, you know, you have to come to enjoy this moment. Come and enjoy life. What's life? Enjoy life. Enjoy life. Enjoy every single moment that happens. That is your target. That is your task. So if there's a moment in life that you do not enjoy, understand that there's a reason that you're not able to enjoy that moment. Why is that reason? Ignorance and attachment. You should be able to enjoy every moment. Some of our 18 minuses had gone last week to do some exams. And I was having a chat with these young children, and something that they said is that, you know, I asked, like, how were the exams? They're like, we sat down, we wrote, we came back. We did our best, and that's it. Was it stressful? I just felt as though, we were doing a paper here. Because what? They realized what? They came, they did, they went. The mind arose, the mind passed. But let's say they don't get the marks they wanted. Now what? The mind arose, the mind passed. Let's say they had to retake the exam again. Now what? The mind arose, the mind passed. I think, you know, this is something that we just need to understand. It is, you know, if you can come to live in this moment, if you can come to enjoy life, it doesn't matter where you go. It doesn't matter what you do. Whether, you know, you're listening to a sermon or whether you're, you know, helping to clean a bathroom, it doesn't matter. You'll truly enjoy every moment. How can you truly enjoy food when you no longer have what? Ignorance and attachment. How can you truly enjoy food when you no longer have ignorance and attachment? Then it doesn't matter. You don't feel the vexation. You can enjoy every moment. Enjoy life. The most precious thing that you own, enjoy it. Enjoy this moment. If you're expecting the next moment, understand you're not enjoying this moment. If you're living expecting the next moment or expecting something to happen next, wanting, you know, you can't wait for something to happen next, then understand that there's an issue, that you're not able to enjoy this moment. If you're talking to a person thinking about what you're doing tomorrow, understand you're not enjoying this moment. You can only truly enjoy this moment when you understand that this is the only moment that you have. Tomorrow? What's happening tomorrow? Imagination. What will they do? What are you going to do, you know, on the 30th? What are you... Okay. 30th Vesak. What are you going to do for Vesak? I'm going to do a massive Buddha Puja and do this, do that. All that is what? All that is what? Imagination. I have to do this really tedious task. I have to do this, I have to do that. You know, I have to... I have to count the grains of rice that are in my alms bowl. I mean, let's say you're given the task to count the grains of rice in your alms bowl. Let's say you have nothing else to do, so your teacher tells you to count how many grains of rice there are in your alms bowl. When will you be fed up? I can guess that majority of people will be fed up before they even pick up the first grain. Because why? They pick it up knowing what? I've got lots more to go. But really, all you have is what? A singular. One. Two. You know it's two because memory tells you you already counted one. But you don't feel what? This is the second rice. This is my 100th rice. No, 100. 500. 1,000. See, all we have to do is come to live in this moment. All we have to do is come to live in this moment, enjoy this moment. Come and enjoy life. That's why to truly enjoy life, you have to be in this asana. Doesn't matter how rich you are, doesn't matter how big your house is, how fast your car is, doesn't matter how expensive your life is. The true way to truly enjoy life is with this asana. Until then, you can only imagine the future and imagine the past. You can never enjoy the present moment. So like I always say, practice. The only thing that we can do is... The only thing, you know, Noble Association can do is what? Tell you. Like I said, it's your responsibility. It's something that you have to do. It's your responsibility. Practice. With whatever you have, practice. Don't give yourself an excuse. I'm telling you this because I'm telling myself the same thing. This is why I really do enjoy these sermons, because I'm telling not just Jews, I'm telling myself. Don't give yourself an excuse. This is all yours. It's your life. It's your moment. Practice. Enjoy it. Right. Like I said, on the 30th, we'll be having Vesak. And so therefore, please do all come. And I think we have many opportunities for everyone to help out to decorate the place. I think Vesak is one of the times that we need lots of help as well. Our decoration team has very extravagant ideas, but need help. Trust me, sometimes you look at some designs and you think, how are you going to build that? And the design and the decoration team says, don't worry, all you have to do is this and that's it. And they are able to make a place that we go every single day to a place that we've never been to in 24 hours. So please do, whenever you have the chance, to help our decoration team to accumulate the merits. And as well as many other meritorious activities you can do for Vesak. I mean, that's the only thing that we can offer. No, we can offer what? Merits? And we can offer the Dhamma. So do as many merits as you possibly can. Accumulate as many merits as you possibly can. Encourage other people to do as many merits as they possibly can. The more you encourage other people, the more merits that you receive. Because when you encourage other people, and they start doing more merits, well, you can rejoice. Because why? That's something that you have helped. As well as, you get more opportunities to help as well. As well as, after this we do have our English Buddha Puja, and at 12:30? 12? We have the discussions? 12. At 12 we have our discussions in this room. Do we have any other messages? Perfect. I think, you know, before, I want to leave you with the message that, you know, seize this moment. Take the full advantage of this moment. Because this moment will never come back. This moment will never come back. Now, I can help your imagination and say, well, that, because every moment that passes brings you closer to the end. But that's imagination. That's imagination. Bahubhuta. So seize this moment. Because this moment will never come back. Take this moment to the absolute maximum and take the 100% advantage of this moment. Because it's your responsibility. Okay, let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's sermon. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits we've all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of these teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits we require to our devotees and to all the members of Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chaplains of chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sananse, as well as other monks resident in the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to spread the teaching of the Buddha, be that by translating his sermon, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any have been born in the woeful planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to be required to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who forsake merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha of shelter, alms, robes, medicines, as well as those who pass on the no-hacks and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins and nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, employees, and to all those who helped us, supported us, assist us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmins, spades, demons, primarily the Sakadevas, Nimans, gods and deities, who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sabbathasana. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our Gan deities, who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may the prosperous divine power and wisdom, may they have same unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also give one chance of our merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that has been offensive family to us in this even long journey in Sansara. Let's also take one chance of merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all that lost lives in the war be the friend or foe, rejoicing in the merits you acquired today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, landslides, and pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends of harm to us in this infinitely long journey in Sansara. May by the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and the blessing of all the merits required throughout the day. May we be a witness to the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arithanuanses, Arahat many nuances in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, may you and I, and everyone who made this program a success, become an Arahat nuance, or Arahat many nuance, in this very life, in the era of the Gautama, Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Chukpa Chamber be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midetnva Desha ginnen midetnva Moha ginnen midetnva Nibbhāna parama sukhayin sukita taravitnva Nibbhāna parama sukhayin sukita taravitnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbhāna parama sukhayin sukita taravitnva Nibbhāna parama sukhayin sukita taravitnva Nibbhāna parama sukhayin Sukita taravitnva Raga ghini niveva Dvesha ghini niveva Moha ghini niveva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Tundongi, Suisyananta Mahagunabalin, Sri Lokasi Satyam, Nibbhan Pramasakin, Sukhtarita.